You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Monday, and I need to start the show by a good friend of mine's retiring today. Major General Paul Kennedy is in Boston, and his retirement ceremony is going to take place on the USS Constitution. Yeah, in the harbor of Boston. That's right. So, he's not even from Massachusetts either, so that's kind of, it's kind of bullshit in my opinion, but I guess it's what he wants to do, so on you, the day you retire, you get to do it like that. So anyhow, I met him when he was a first lieutenant. He comes to the basic school to be an instructor, and I used to run the combat town, urban combat. In fact, that's how I initially saw all the videos of General Christmas that I've seen in my life. And then one of his kids, I think it's his oldest son, Jim. He was in one of the classes, and he comes up during the break, and he introduces himself, and he talks about when. I think the video, the first time it was ever seen, is in the video. It was a documentary series. Remember the 10,000 Day War that appeared on PBS in, sometime during the 70s, 80s? Let me find out. The 10,000 Day War. PBS. TV miniseries, 1980. 26-part Canadian television documentary. How about that? Yeah, I don't know who that was, but... Well, I'll tell you who it was. 26-part, half-hour Canadian documentary on the Vietnam War was produced in 1980 by Michael McClear. The series aired in Canada on CBC, in the United States, and in the United Kingdom on Channel 4. McClear visited Vietnam during the production of the series and had access to film material there. He was the first Western journalist allowed to visit the area since the war. The documentary series was consolidated into 13 hour-long episodes for American television syndication. The series was released on video cassette format by Embassy and won a National Education Association Award for Best Documentary. Series writer Peter Arnett was an Associated Press reporter in Vietnam from 1962 to 1975, which means he covered virtually the entire war. CBC aired only 18 of the episodes during the 1980-81 season because the series production was incomplete. The remaining episodes were broadcast during the 1981-82 season. British audiences saw it in 1984-85. Let's see. So interesting. So anyway, Jim Christmas, Second Lieutenant Christmas, talked about, I didn't want to get sidetracked here, but I already am. He comes up during the break and we're talking. And I think he hung out after the class because I know we talked again. And then I want to say I was over at IOC by the time he got to IOC. But I'm not sure about that. Anyway, so he's talking about they come to the house to interview his dad. And nobody would have, you know, in 19, probably late, probably 78, 79, when they were putting it together, producing it, nobody had seen the footage, right? I mean, there wasn't an internet and, you know, this stuff didn't float around. So he said they set their stuff up to interview my dad in like the living room or someplace. And, you know, we were like sitting off to the side watching him be interviewed. And they had a monitor and they showed him being wounded, you know, in our living room. And he said, you know, you can imagine what that was like for us as a family to watch that and then hear him talk about it. He said, but, you know, cause he was talking specifically about the footage that you'll see of he becomes General Christmas. He's Captain Christmas at the time. Being wounded in Hue. And yeah, I don't know, because it should be a video. I should track that down and attach it to this. But anyway, about Paul Kennedy. Anyway, what the video shows is it shows Christmas laying in the street with his radio operator and company Gunny, right, attending to him, I think, if I recall. I mean, so it's a street in Way, and then they pull a mule up to him, right? So a mule at the time is a general purpose vehicle. It's just a flat bed. It's got a driver's seat and four wheels. And that's about it, right? And a steering wheel and a gas pedal and a brake pedal. It's then got a flat bed, right? It was a wooden flat bed to my recollection. And you had with a metal rim around the wood, right, to keep it from falling apart, and that's all it was. And it normally existed for the 81's platoon to move ammunition in an infantry battalion, but they got hijacked and used for all kinds of stuff. And if you could get extra ones, you got your hands on those things. So yeah, the mule. USMCM mule. Ammunition carrier. Yeah, do a search on that. Here it is, man. Let me tell you, they were handy pieces of gear if you could get your hands on them. Normally you couldn't, though. Here's one with a 106 recoilless rifle on it. Yeah, it's called a mule with a kick. Yeah, that's awesome. You see these things now you see them in museums now. Here's a great picture one. Yeah, but all it is, it's four-wheel drive with four tires on it, and probably the same tires that went on the Jeep, and it's just a flatbed. It's a wooden flatbed with a driver's seat. So anyway, they're loading him on that, and you hear rounds incoming. And you see everybody, you see people scatter, And I'm not sure if, I think it's his radio operator. So General Captain Christmas is on the, Captain Christmas is on the flatbed of the mule, laying there wounded, right? And the fight's going on around him. And then you can hear either mortars or artillery inbound. And everybody runs, right? Everybody ducks. And his radio operator and I think his gunny both place their bodies over his. And you watch it, and you're like, holy shit, man. Guys get medals of honor for that. And, you know, the complete disregard for your own life because somebody else needs your help. So anyway, I'm teaching that module at the basic school. Okay. So, and so you do the classroom piece, and now I'm out at Combat Town. And this is before we actually invest, the Marine Corps actually invested in Combat Towns. What, like we have today, what we had then was cinder blocks on top of concrete slabs. There tended to be no doors on it. You know, it was just as rudimentary as you could get. And it was maybe two or three blocks long by three or four blocks wide. So you could attack it from any four directions and you were going to get kind of sort of the same thing. And that's how we did it. So I'm out there one day and I'm teaching and I've got one guy helping me and he used to scream at everybody. Oh my God. Some people like teaching lieutenants. Some people do not. He did not. And so, up walks this lieutenant with his hands in his pocket. And he looks, he goes, "Are you Captain Mack?" And I said, "I am. Who are you?" He said, "I'm Paul Kennedy." I said, "Hey man, what's going on?" We shake hands. And we met. And we became good friends. Like most of my friends, he's smart. And he's funny. He is funny, funny, funny. And so we wrote an article called "Why Doesn't First Fire Team Rush?" And then I got to IRC, and I made sure that he got over there because he should. He was a good instructor. He liked teaching lieutenants. He's smart. He liked studying our profession, and which were all the you know, in my opinion, those are the kind of instructors that you needed at the infantry officer course. And so he followed me. And then, you know, we stayed in touch over the years. And then we were in Ramadi together in 2004. And then he was north of us in Helmand in 2010-11 as a regimental commander of RCT-2. So he's gone on to great things. He's, deputy MEF commander of 3MEF. He was, when the typhoon hit the Philippines a few years ago, he was instrumental. He led that relief third MEB that went down there. And then he's been Marine Corps Recruiting Command. He's been Office of Legislative Affairs. He's been Public Affairs for the Marine Corps. So, I probably saw him at his best as a leader in Ramadi in 2004 when he was Battalion Commander of 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines. The Magnificent Bastards, as they're known. And so, they got it on every day in that city and they fought and without a whole lot. I mean, the whole thing was new. I mean, it was the first iteration of it. Fighting somebody who wanted to take you on inside of a city, we didn't have, for instance, now we have much smaller munitions that we could drop a house and not destroy the four houses around it. Back then, we didn't have any of that stuff. We didn't have the quantity of precision-guided munitions. We didn't have the quantity of ISR, right? So they pretty much went out and got it on, I would say, you know, very much World War II style. They patrolled during the day, and they OP'd at night, and then they fought. and we didn't do supporting arms inside the city too much. So they fought with rifles and machine guns and hand grenades, and he let them throughout all that. And so the Marines of that battalion, man, don't say a bad word about Paul Kennedy in front of them. Anyway, he retires today. And I last saw him a few weeks ago at the Pentagon in D.C. He actually introduced me to the Secretary of the Navy and told the Secretary of the Navy that, hey, Mac's working on a thing called post-traumatic winning, and, sir, you need to talk to him. So not sure if I'll get on that calendar, but no, he loves Marines, and he's loved being a Marine, a son of the state of Connecticut, and he retires today. So all the best of luck to him. And all the best of luck to him today is he's surrounded by his family and friends and retires on the Constitution. So good morning to you. We'll talk about the news today. And that's what we'll do. Oh, and then Chris Woodbridge of the Marine Corps Gazette is going to join us. We'll talk to Woody about what's going on in the May and June issues of the Gazette, and we'll talk current events with him as well, which is always interesting to do. So, good morning. Welcome to All Marine Radio. Sit back, relax, enjoy the morning with us. Well, that should be an interesting one. Chris Woodbridge, always an interesting guest, gets around the Marine Corps a bit as the editor and publisher of the Gazette, and has his finger on the pulse a little bit. So we'll talk to him about that. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning. Obviously, today, this is dedicated to Major General Paul Kennedy, who today transfers to the 1st Civ Div. And he's a good friend. He's a funny guy. He's a smart guy. Wish him nothing but the best. He and I, as a captain, he's a first lieutenant. We wrote it. An article for the Gazette that still gets read today called Why Does the First Fire Team Rush? So a good friend, wish him all the best. This is dedicated to him and his career and his retirement, and nothing but the best for Papa Jules, as he's known.
We have fought. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
That is so rich.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time to check the weather. Then I'm going to go off on student debt. Anyway, the weather first, though. Currently, it is sunny and 83 in the nation, just south of the nation's capital in Quantico, Virginia. It is cloudy and 82, partly cloudy and 82 at Camp Lejeune. Yeah, unless you have any question in your mind, when Gerald Van Riper says Lejeune, that's how you say it, all right? Sunny and 58 in 29 Palms. Cloudy and 57 at Camp Pendleton. At Camp Smith in Hawaii, it is still dark, cloudy, and 77 degrees. That's right, it's going to be warm in Hawaii today. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, 73. Further west in the Pacific. In a place where I served with Paul Kennedy. Went out and roamed the streets of Ramadi with him a few times. It is sunny in 94 in Ramadi, Iraq, in the Al-Anbar province. Late in the day there. So let me just warm it up there. And in the Al-Anbar province in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is cloudy and 87 degrees. At the home of All Marine Radio, partly cloudy and 59. Actually, it says fair skies. Yeah, whatever. Looking for a high of 67 degrees. And then tomorrow, 65 and windy. On Wednesday, 67 under partly sunny skies. That is a look at the weather. Yeah, like weird weather in California. Anyway, you know, before we go to the break and then we come back and check news, or should I take a break first? Let me take a break and then we come back. I want to talk about student debt. Okay? I mean, what a joke. So if you, unless you have any doubt where that's going, right? Unless you have any doubt where this conversation goes, student debt forgiveness for everybody. We'll just forgive your debt. No problem, because you're not really responsible for your life. You know, life's hard, and it's not fair that you have all this, you know, that some people have debt and other people's don't. Other people's don't. Yeah, did you get that? Plural? All right, so, yeah, we'll get that one going when I come back next here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good,
but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
So Colleen signed up for a civil defense course over the weekend. So she and her friends thought it'd be a good idea that instead of being part of the civil defense drill at the school, that they could help run it. And that way they wouldn't have to sit on the grass for 3 hours and do nothing. So I said, okay, got it. So when is it? Well, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I said, okay. So how many hours on Friday? Well, it's from 4 to 8, I think it was. Okay, what about Saturday? 8 till 4. Sunday, 8 till 4. So you're going to go to this class for 20 hours to get out of three class? 3 hours of sitting on the grass? Who made this decision? Suffice it to say, by Saturday, she had been civil defensed out. But she does know how to put out a fire. Use the fire extinguishers. And she understands what triage is. And she knows how to use a fulcrum to get a piece of masonry off somebody. There you have it. And so last night, we got ready to watch a movie. And I don't know if Colleen's trying to kiss my ass because she needs something. All right, I'm not exactly sure. But this was suspicious. Okay. She says, let's finish watching Unbroken. What? You want to watch Unbroken, right? That's a Louis Zamperini story, right? Ran in the Olympics from out here in Torrance. And Peyton Davis. Anyway, so she said, yeah, I thought it was interesting. So I'd never seen the whole movie. It's not something I thought, well, I don't really want to watch that, do I? So, but I did. I watched it. I remember reading the stories about Angelina Jolie, who produced it and directed it. And I thought I'm sure it wasn't real, but I enjoyed the movie. I wasn't too graphic, honestly, and I think got its point across about his story. But you know, the thing you're looking at is like, you know, I thought about it. I heard somebody talk about Sergeant Major Canley, right? And you hear in that thing I play, in this thing. Hold on. In this thing right here. No, not that thing. This thing. Okay, in that thing.
The goal is to keep the monkeys up.
Goodness, we've got a show.
Yes, deep.
In a way that would honor.
Because PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the core, you know it's your...
Anyway.
John Canley, a leader who led from the front.
There you go.
Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward
them that it's not do as I say,
is do as I do. And just being that close with him brings motivation to him.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
To understand that, you have to understand, I heard somebody talk about it later, that, who was it? Somebody here in the last couple of weeks. They said Canley was a fatalist. Well, what do you mean? Well, he just believed he'd been in combat long enough that if there was something with your name on it, you weren't gonna run for it. So he just went about, he had accepted that. And we've talked about that on the program, that, you know, that the randomness of, you know, of life, and in particular of going to war. And you see it all the time. And Canley had accepted it. That if he was going to die leading, you know, Alpha Company 1-1, then he would die leading Alpha Company 1-1, but he was going to lead it. And I think most people come to that conclusion, that the randomness they see in combat is not something you can run from. And it's not something that you can pray away. You can pray for your own strength, but you cannot pray away the randomness of combat. And so Canley, when I hear that, just a few minutes ago, I was thinking about it. In the movie last night, you watch the only life that those people will live, right? And they happen to be captured by the Japanese. And just the sheer brutality of the Japanese, right? That aside, you know, how the way fate turns and some live and some die. And so it was resident in that movie last night, so. Made me think of that. All right, I want to talk about student loans. Here's my question to you. In this culture that we're carving out, at what point are you responsible for you? Ever? So you make a decision to go to the University of Michigan that costs you $23,000 a year. That's the school. Okay, and then you pay your let's just say it's $2,000 a month for you to live and eat. So that's another $18,000. So let's just say it's $40,000 a year. And that it'd probably be much more than that. So over the course of 4 years, you're going to take out $160,000. So that's somehow not fair to you. That it's your right to go to that school. That it's not fair to you that you had to take out loans for this, and somebody else whose parents are really rich, their parents wrote them a check. And somehow or other, the rest of the country is responsible for paying for that situation to be righted, so you should get your education free too. What? So university education now completely free? Just go where you want to do, spend the number of years you want to spend, and the government will pick up the tab. At what point are you responsible for you? Isn't going to school and that financial decision, isn't that part of growing up? That I know that I'm assuming this debt, but it's like this continuation of this world that we're creating where there's no do-out. There's no reconciliation. There are no consequences. You know what the consequence of going... You know what the consequence of... going to school is at the tune of $50,000 a year? You know what the consequence of that? That is repaying that money over the course of your professional life, to the tune of $200,000. Okay, that's a home. Now you made that decision, and now you're crying about, oh, it's so unfair, and I have these loans, and it's screwing up my credit score. Well, no shit, man. And I'll tell you what, it's the continuation of a theme in our culture that's, in my opinion, very disturbing, and that is, you don't have to make right the things that you do. You don't have to pay off your debts, right? It's somebody else's responsibility to pay off all your loans. I see this and it just blows me away that when you decided you would do that, what did you think? Oh, I'll go to school for 50 grand a year and fuck it, I'll figure it out later. And now it's somebody else's responsibility to pay that for you too. Just like you've avoided consequences for most of the other stuff in your life. I look at this and I'm like, I am old, man. Cause I don't get this. Where does that money come from? Where does that money come from so that the rest of us, right? Why does somebody who doesn't go to college want to pay for you that have? How is that fair to them? You know what's fair? You made that decision. Nobody else did. Nobody put a gun to your head to do it. So here's an idea. Why don't you pay it? What? Yeah. Why don't you pay that? Well, that's kind of unreasonable. it's really not. Here's an email from Vacaville Man. Good morning, Mac. With the 75th anniversary of D-Day upon us, I sat down yesterday and watched an older program from 2010, World War II in high definition, the Air War, on the 8th Army Air Corps in Italy. They were flying B-17s. The show can still be viewed on YouTube. I've watched this program perhaps two times before, but always see something new. There's one scene where a belly gunner turret was stuck in place. The landing gear was frozen and could not extend. Well, you can understand the rest. They had to land and the belly turret remained stuck in place. Andy Rooney was also embedded with this unit. I forgot Andy Rooney was flying and reporting on actual missions. It was awesome to hear him speak about his experience in 2010. I learned this bomber group lost more men than the Marines lost in the whole Pacific campaign. The casualties of the 8th Air Force, the 8th Army Air Corps over Europe in World War II, unbelievable. I used to believe that being a ground infantryman in some of those battles of World War II was unfathomable, the most dangerous. I am far from dismissing the dangerous battles. However, seeing this program again, how slow those bombers flew during missions into Germany, day missions, the flak, the cold, many times no fighter escorts, German Luftwaffe. It was pure suicide. I now believe being on the ground, you may have a slightly better chance at survival after seeing this program. Incredible man, Mac. Just unbelievable. Just incredible. Be well, Dave. World War II in HD, the air war. Yeah, you look at that, look at the casualty figures. Stunning. Absolutely, positively stunning. We'll take a look at the news of the day. Show of force in the Middle East continues with the Lincoln and the Kearsarge. Joint operations, the USS Abraham Lincoln Carrier Strike Group has entered the Arabian Sea and conducted joint drills with the U.S. amphibious forces, Navy officials said. The tensions continue to mount following intelligence report that Iran or its proxy forces plan to harm American troops in the region. So, much ado about that over the last couple of weeks. You have people saying it's all a ruse. You have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We played that. You can go listen to it. Just go into the podcast page and type in Dunford and it'll pop up. And it's him in his own words kind of talking about it. So you'll see that. But the Marines are in the region. So we'll see what happens. Next, this is Stars and Stripes. U.S. put nuclear waste under a dome on a Pacific island. Now it's cracking that dome open. In 1977, thousands of U.S. service members began collecting tainted surface soil across the Marshall Islands and began bringing it to an uninhabited island. according to the government, the island's government. In 1980, a massive concrete dome was placed over the fallout debris, sealing off the material. Today, due to disrepair and rising sea tides, it's dangerously vulnerable and it's going to be cracked open. So, we'll see what we find there, right? Our own little Chernobyl. At 6:45 on March 1st, 1954, the blue sky stretching over the South Pacific Ocean was split open by an enormous red flash. Within seconds, a mushroom cloud towered 4.5 miles high over Bikini Atoll in the Marshall Islands. The explosion of the U.S. government's first weaponized hydrogen bomb was 1,000 times more powerful than the little boy atomic blast that flattened Hiroshima. Scientists had underestimated the size of what became known as the Castle Bravo test, resulting in an explosion that was 2.5 times larger than expected. Radioactive ash dropped more than 7,000 square miles from the bomb site, caking nearby inhabited islands. Within hours, the atoll was covered with a fine, white, powder-like substance, the Marshall Islands health minister would later testify, according to the Atomic Heritage Foundation. No one knew it was radioactive fallout. The children played in the snow. They ate it. So, now, that coffin that was built in the 80s, right, is in disrepair. Quote, I've just been with the president of the Marshall Islands, her name is Hilda Hein, who is very worried because there is risk of leaking radioactive materials that are contained in a kind of coffin in the area. In 1980, a massive concrete dome, 18 inches thick and shaped like a flying saucer, was placed over the collected fallout debris, sealing off the material on the island of Runit, R-U-N-I-T. But the $218 million project was only supposed to be temporary until a more permanent site was developed. However, no further plans were ever hatched. Two and a half times more powerful than they thought it was going to be? What was that like? Whoops! Didn't see that coming. You know? And then what have we done relative to the health for those people? You think we just turned their back on them? Well, I don't want to say that's what I think, but if past performance is any indication of future returns, yeah, we've got ourselves a problem there, boys and girls. All right. What are the stories here? A miracle 75 years later. French man finds American father fought in World War II. A Frenchman figured he'd likely go to his grave without ever knowing who his father was, unable to identify the U.S. serviceman who had taken a bullet to the skull and been nursed back to health in a military hospital by his mother. These stories are crazy. Honestly. Into his 70s, André Gantois, I knew it, Stars and Stripes, man, they're brutal. $20 for a year, you think I should do that? I probably should. 1 month digital access trial for 99 cents for 1 month. How do you say no? How do you say no to that? Well, now, hell, I've got to read this article. But I have my own foolproof way of getting around there. Getting around there, their number quota for the month. Flip it to a new browser. You'll get five more, Mac. That's right. Mac the Tightwad. Come on. I mean, the tyranny of it all. All right. I want to read this. Into his 70s, Gantois still had no clues to pursue, no name to work with, no paper trail to follow. As a consequence, he had no peace. Throughout my life, I lived with this open wound, he says. I never accepted my situation. Of not knowing who my father was. Most of all, knowing that he didn't know about me, didn't know about my existence. Even as Europe, the United States, and their allies marked the 75th anniversary since 160,000 Allied troops stormed the heavily fortified 50-mile stretch of Nazi-occupied coastline in Normandy, the history of D-Day and its aftermath is still being written. The big picture, of course, is well known, meticulously documented, precisely conserved, to be told and retold for generations to come. All these years later, there are enduring holes in the narrative, too. Among the thick Normandy hedgerows were German troops dug in and the Allied advance bogged out. Soldiers' bones are still regularly disinterred. So brutal and chaotic was the fighting in France that thousands went missing or couldn't be identified before they were buried in graves, still marked a comrade in arms known but to God. Soldiers on all sides also fathered tens of thousands of children, some of whom were unable to even answer the most fundamental questions. Where did I come from? Until a few months ago, when he calls an unexpected miracle, changed his life, and filled in one of the pieces of wartime history, Gantois was among them. Growing up as a post-war kid in eastern France, he would simply draw a line on forms at school that asked pupils for their father's names and other family details. His mother and grandmother told him his father was killed in France's war in Vietnam that broke out in 1946, the year Gantois was born. The grandmother said his father's name was Jack. A trusting child, Gantois couldn't know these were lies. He didn't pay much heed to elderly neighbors who called him the young American or the American's kid. Only at age 15, when Gantois was mourning the death of his mother, taken by tuberculosis at the age of 37, did he get the truth. "Listen, Andre, I have to tell you," his 73-year-old grandmother confessed to telling him, "your dad was an American in the war." Later in his 20s, so 55 years ago, he became determined that he would find out. Visits to U.S. offices in France and the United States only gave him frustration until last June. Urged by his daughter-in-law, Gantois took a DNA test. Weeks later, in the middle of the night, she called him with an earth-shaking result. Quote, "You have an American brother, a sister, a whole family," Gantois recalls her telling him. He said, "I did not know what to say." How crazy is this stuff? You go to myancestry.com or 23andMe, and you take the DNA test, and your whole life changes. His dad, the test helped reveal, had been Wilburn Bill Henderson from Essex, Missouri. The infantryman landed on Omaha Beach seemingly just after D-Day. Fought through Normandy, suffered a head wound in the closing months of the war, and met Irene Gantois at a hospital in occupied Germany. After Germany surrendered in 1945, when the soldier came to visit her at home in eastern France, she apparently didn't tell him that she was carrying his child. He returned to the United States, started a family, never spoke to his children about her before his death in 1997. The trail would have ended there for Andre Gantois had his American half-brother not taken a DNA test. By chance, they both picked the same testing company, enabling it to be put together. The two men and Gantois' half-sister, Judy, met for the first time last September in France. How awesome is that? He finds out who his father is. Yeah, Stars and Stripes today. Next headline, Stars and Stripes. Special Forces soldiers parachute over Mont Saint-Michel in honor of World War II fighters. So, and then also the American Taliban, John Walker Lind, will be free after 17 years. He will be released from federal prison this coming Thursday, 3 years early. So, there you have it, Stars and Stripes. The let me go through. Marine Corps Times, U.S. Conducts a Navy exercise in the Arabian Sea. So the Lincoln and the Kearsarge, I guess. Ohio man is correcting my pronunciation. Kearsarge. So the Kearsarge. Marines are out there. Hazing at 8th and I, always a favorite subject of people. Three Silent Platoon Marines booted from the Marine Corps after hazing investigation. So this has been brewing for a while. And again, if you don't know, right, 67% of the Marine Corps is under the age of 25. Let me say that again. 67% of the Marine Corps is under the age of 25. That's pretty amazing, don't you think? I'm going to give you some quick demographics of the Marine Corps. I will, because I'm like that. No, you know, I was looking at something, and I thought it, I just found it interesting. Okay? I just found it interesting. Let me see if I can find what I was looking at. This is not what I was looking at. Is this what I'm looking at? That is not what I'm looking at. How about this? Here it is. Let's see. Approximately 39% of Marines are Lance Corporals or below. Think about that. 40% of the Marine Corps exists below the rank of E3. 67% of Marines are 25 years of age or younger. 67, that would be two-thirds for all you math majors out there, okay? 9% of the Marine Corps is female. 10% of the Marine Corps is officer. But the one that jumps off the page, literally off the page, 67% of Marines are 25 years of age or younger, with all the problems thereunto pertaining. So I say that to say this. A hazing investigation by NCIS and the Marine Corps Silent Drill Team resulted in at least 5 Marines being punished, 3 of whom recently were separated from the Marine Corps. Pretty substantial penalty. For it. And again, to give you the seriousness that this stuff is looked upon, following a 4-month NCIS investigation that kicked off in November, 3 Marines were charged with and pled guilty to Article 81 conspiracy, Article 92 failure to obey an order or regulation. Those Marines spent about 25 to 49 days in pretrial confinement in the Rappahannock Regional Jail in Stafford, Virginia. Following release, each received nonjudicial punishment, which resulted in reduction in rank, 60 days of restriction, forfeiture of 1.5 months of pay for 2 months, with 1 month suspended by the commanding officer. All faced administrative separation from the Marine Corps, according to the Sergeant Major Matthew Hackett, Sergeant Major of the barracks. So that in the news. And again, you know, the only way to deal with it is you have to make an example. You have to, like, lay the wood to people. You have to lay the wood to people. So, if you do that, then that's as much as you can do. You know the consequences. You want to be stupid, then be stupid. But know that you're going to pay. Know that you're going to pay. All right, early bird, top five stories, and then Chris Woodbridge coming on number one, U.S. president says war would be end of Iran as tensions rise. I think that would be a fact. Two, silent drill platoon Marines booted from the Marine Corps. Three, that's number two in early bird, Colonel Ned Stark on his provocative columns, quote, I had no idea I was setting off a powder keg. Colonel Jason Lamb knew his columns challenging the Air Force on how it chooses and grows leaders, published last year under the pseudonym Colonel Ned Stark, would touch on important subjects that before had only been whispered about. And so here's the question. Why don't people have the moral courage to stand up and say, we need to talk about this? All right. Going on the Marine Corps relative to discipline. But again, I probably shouldn't, you know, I shouldn't say that, you know, it's a surprise. Number four, male sailors created a rape list of female shipmates on a Georgia-based submarine. Unbelievable. Number five, Navy SEAL Marine Raider hazing that killed a Green Beret. That killed a Green Beret? That murdered a Green Beret, left an irreparable hold in the lives of family and friends. So this is hazing that resulted in somebody dying. It wasn't murder. When you smash down somebody's door, right? It's all a big accident, right? Wrong. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. Chris Woodbridge will join us. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next here on this Monday. Again, the day Paul Kennedy retires. Yeah, so, yeah, big deal. Big deal. Anyway, more Ball Marine Radio coming up next.